Okay, guys, okay. A nice but rare opportunity to learn Parshas Tzav. On a typical year of Parshas Tzav, the Shabbos HaGadol, or it's Erev Pesach, or it's around that time, and Tzav gets gobbled up by Pesach. And we're all learning about Pesach, and it's a nice little Parshas Tzav just to help you get your coordinates. There are two lists of Korbanos in the Torah. One is Parshas Vayikra, one is Parshas Tzav. They're not identical, but there's a lot of redundancies. And more or less, just to give you coordinates, this is not tonight's share, just so you can have a framework of how to read them, Vayikra is directed to Am Yisrael, Dabel B'nei Yisrael, Adam Ki Akiv Mekem Karban Lashem, Tzav is Tzav B'Saron with B'nei Aaron. So Tzav is the list of Karbanos directed to the Kohanim, Vayikra is the list of Karbanos directed to Am Yisrael, and if you look at the order of the Karbanos, it reflects that which Karbanos would Jews, non-Kohanim, be more interested in, which Karbanos would Kohanim be interested in, what Avodos are unique to Kohanim that will appear in Tzav, what Avodos are more generic to the Eis HaMikdash that will appear in Vayikra. So just in terms of, a lot of times you just don't know how to read the Parsha, so much is happening, Vayikra, Tzav, what's the difference? This is more or less the this is the bifurcation between Vayikra and Tzav. Let's talk tonight about two aspects of Avodas Beis HaMikdash, Avodas HaMishkan, that are highlighted in Tzav. And one seems to be very technical and practical and even menial. And one is more intriguing because it creates a bridge between two very different states of mind. Hopefully we'll talk about each of them. And of course, the goal is not only to understand the Avodas themselves and to put ourselves back into the Beis HaMikdash, Meheri Yibana Beis HaMikdash, but everything in the Beis HaMikdash is a metaphor and is iconic for our experience. So even if you're not a Kohen, well, what are they going through? And when they enter their Beis HaMikdash, this is how they behave. When I enter my Beis HaMikdash, which isn't place, but space, which isn't location, but mentality, how do I mimic their experiences? How do I grow? So the Kohanim are providing a roadmap for Avodas Hashem, for getting close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when it's not reflected in location and geography, but it's reflected in mentality and attitude. Okay? So I just quoted the two pesukim for you because there's a lot to talk about. Section number one, which is the beginning of Tzav. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemar. Tzav v'Aaron v'Zbonav Lemar. Zos Torah Sa'ola. So you'd expect Zos Torah Sa'ola. We know what an Ola is. Look at the beginning of Vayikra. The laws of an Ola, the Hazal Sadam of an Ola, the Shechita of an Ola, where you shechted, the sacrifice, the ceremonies, the rites. What happens? So we're referring to all the korbanos, but Ola is the last korban. Remember, the last korban and the first korban is an Ola. The first korban is Ola Shobeina Shol Shachar. Has to be the first korban. The last korban has to be the Tamid Shobein Arbayim. So the last korban brought was the Ola of the Tamid Shobein Arbayim. And Hiha Ola is referring back to the information we have about the Korban Ola from Parshas Tetzaveh, because remember, this is a continuation of Tzav, is a continuation of Tetzaveh. So Tetzaveh described the Yemei HaMiluim, the Korbanos, they have described the Big Day Kuna. And what occurs at the end of Tzav? Esakev Esachad Taseh B'Boker, Tetzaveh, V'esakev Esachanit Taseh Ben Arbayim. So Parshas Tzav picks up where Parshas Tetzaveh left off. You bring the two Korbanos, by the way, the late Korban will create a lot of ashes. Not that other Korbanos will not create a lot of ashes, but the other Korbanos, the ashes will get burnt more completely, whereas the late Korban will take the entire night to burn. So that ash has to be removed. V'lava shakoyim pasik yimol midovad, midor clothing, or mechnesevag yobasha b'sar. Maybe I'll talk about why the word mida means clothing tomorrow in the Rashi Shir, a little plug for the Rashi Shir. V'heirem es hadeshen eshet tochal ha'esh, so he gathers all the ashes into one big heap near the Mizbeach. And he takes off the clothing. And he puts on other clothing. And he takes the ashes outside of the Beis HaMikdash precincts to a Makom Tahor. Obviously, just again to help you get your coordinates, because a lot of this is unfamiliar to you. The Trumas Hadeshen happened every day. The Hotzah Sadashin happened on a need basis. So please note chewing gum in the show, okay? That's it. So the Trumas Sadashin was a ceremony and a ritual every day. The removal of the ashes, well, so what does that say? When the pile got too big, that's to remove the ashes because it was getting unseemly, it was getting uncomfortable. So it wasn't Hotzah Sadashin every day, it was Trumas Sadashin every day. The big question is, why do we care? Why do we need to see this? Obviously, you need to have ash maintenance. You call them sanitation department, they'll gather the ashes. Why does it need to be a ritual every day? Avodas Hashem. Obviously, in order for the base, in order for the mizbech to function properly, anyone here who has ever been on overnight or a chutz or madura, I know that at a certain point it gets too messy. You want to cook some things, you have to clear away some of the ashes, move some of the ashes, make the ashes hotter. It's fire maintenance. Why does it have to be ritualized and institutionalized as a ceremony? And what does the clothing have to do with it? Why does the Torah have to tell us that he changes the clothing? So we're going to talk a little bit about Trumas Hadeshen and Hotzas Hadeshen. I'm not going to distinguish between them right now. Then we'll talk a little bit about clothing and the role of clothing and Avodas Hashem. And we'll see if we'll have time to get to the second part of the shiur. Okay. The reason the Kohen begins Trumas Hadeshen in the beginning of every morning is a menial job. It's a lowly job. It's a job that will make him dirty. That's why he has to change clothing. Not necessarily the Trumas Hadeshen, but the Hotzas Hadeshen will make him very, very dirty. But the Trumas Hadeshen is not elegant and noble and attractive. It's not shechita. It's not ketores. It's not lighting the menorah. It's cleaning up ashes. It's gathering ashes and starting the process of cleaning ashes. And on the one hand, it creates a mood of hachna and humility before you start your day. So the Kohen enters the Beis HaMikdash, starts his day, whichever Kohen is serving in that Mishmar. And there was a Trumas Hadeshen pious, there was a lottery to decide who would do Trumas Hadeshen, like all the Avodos. But it's not just one person, it sets the mood of the Beis HaMikdash. And we're standing in front of our Kodesh Baruch Hu, and even though we're going to be walking around in Big Day Kahuna, and even though we'll be elegant and regal, lekavod ulasifares, when I stand in front of our Kodesh Baruch Hu, no job is too low for me. A, because I'm standing in front of the Melech Malchim Lachem. And that's why humility in life is such a gateway to Avodas Hashem. You're looking for that one trait to find Avodas Hashem, the trait that leads to all other traits, the trait of all traits, the trait of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's humility. Because true humility comes from standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the irony. The closer you are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more humble you are. Moshe was able to say, I'm the most humble man on the earth. If anyone else would say that, that would be sanctimonious. But Moshe said it not because he negated himself, not because he denied his own talents, not because he wasn't aware of himself, but because his view and his perspective was so broadened by seeing Hashem so clearly that he couldn't. He knew what his accomplishments were. He knew the offset between himself and the rest of Am Yisrael. But he knew that despite that offset, he was chasing infinity. The Kodesh Baruch Hu was infinite and standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's why a lot of people ask me when they leave yeshiva, what should I look for in a Rebbe? Good advice in life. What should you look for in a bottom of life? Right here. And most of your life, you haven't really chosen your Rebbeim. You've gone to school. Your parents made the decision for you. You chose the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael based on a lot of factors. And the Rebbeim are just there. But at a certain point in your life, you're going to have to make a decision where to live and which Rebbeim to follow and who to listen to and who to be inspired by. The best I can give you is try to find people. And it's hard to detect. You can interview people about that. Try to find people who have humility. Now, humility won't always be shown. Won't always be displayed. Sometimes Rebbeim will demand that you show them kavod. But they don't. It's not about them. It's about trying to connect you to Kavod Shemayim through themselves. Most of the Rebbeim here in this yeshiva are products of a newer generation of Rebbeim, a bit of a revolution that Rav Amital made in 1967, thinking that the old model created too much distance from Rebbeim, and Rebbeim were dressed differently, and they sat up front, and you spoke to them in third person. And for 1968, Rav Amital felt that was a little bit stale, had to be refreshed. And maybe we're in a different period. Maybe we have to show more respect to Rebbeim. Maybe the pendulum swings. With all social norms and customs, pendulums swing and have to be corrected. The biggest mistake I tell you all the time is Rav Amital can't be quoted out of context. Anything Rav Aaron Lichtenstein ever said can be lifted and stated completely out of context. Rav Aaron was panoramic, was multi-generational. You can take Rav Aaron's statements and put it back into the 17th century and they'd be just as valid. He spoke at some plane beyond history, beyond time, beyond social context. Rav Amital is the exact inverse. Everything Rav Amital said is based on a particular condition and a particular moment and a particular response. And the biggest mistake people say is, well, Rav Amital said, yeah, he said that in 1968, he said that in 1973, he said that in response to this phenomenon, to that phenomenon. It's 50 years later. It's 60 years later. You can't just cut and paste. And what was right then may not be right now. So you have to try to adjust based on the changing context and the changing culture. So Rav Amital felt that in 1968, Rabbanim had to be more approachable, less distance. Anyone know what the word for distance in Hebrew is? Less distance, right? Distance in Hebrew is not just physical distance, but behavioral distance. Like they're beyond you, and they're part of a different world, part of a different planet, and you can't approach them, you can't talk to them. And you, so he, in general, the modern world, we tend not to at least in our world, to create a culture of showing respect and submissiveness and Rebbe this and Rebbe that, I think we'll pay a price for it. But try to find humility. There could be Rebbeim that are brought up in a culture in which, in that culture, I'm fond of telling this story, I'm saying with a lot of fondness. I don't know if you've ever heard, the first Rosh Hashiva of Keren B'Yavna was a very interesting person. He was the Talmud of the Chazon Ish. His name was Reb Chaim Goldwicht. He was Reb Meir Goldwicht's uncle. And he, essentially, if you're looking for the first Rosh Hashiva of Hezder Yeshiva, he was. Now again, this big debate, what was the first Hezder Yeshiva? Because that Hezder Yeshiva was built based on the notion that Hezder is B'Yavna. An ideal of the best and brightest should go learn in yeshivas. And if a person doesn't want to learn in yeshiva, so that's why people who want to, let's say, give Gush the credit, they'll say, oh, because Gush was the first Hezer L'Chadchila, Hezer, the first yeshiva, which Hezer was seen as the ideal. Whatever, this is silly debate, but it's the one put in context. So Chaim Goldwicht, he came from the old school of Europe, and in that school, you showed respect to Rabbanim. And it wasn't about him, but he was very, very imperial and very aggressive in making you respect him, but it wasn't about him. Just to show you a story I once heard, and this would never happen in yeshiva. I can never imagine it happening. He was giving a shir kolli, evidently, and the beis medrash was full, and he asked the boy for a glass of water. In my life, I never heard Rav Aaron Lichtenstein ask someone for a glass of water, which is out of his wheelhouse. But Rav Chaim Goldwicht, asked for a glass of water. So the boy brought a pitcher of water in a glass and put it in front of Rav Goldwicht, in front of the entire audience. Rav Goldwicht waited for him to sit down and said, come back up now and pour it for me. Oh my goodness, what an egotist, what's all this, what a self-promotion. No, in that world, I'm the Rebbe, and I'm representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not about me. I can't even machol my kavod. We went to one day in the Gemara Kiddushin, Rosh Hamachol HaKavod and Kavod HaMachol. It's not about your kavod. You're just a signpost. You're an intermediary between HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we can hold on to and physical people that we can hold on to. Okay, so the different cultures. But the Kohanim are going to enter a situation in which they can self-promote and can self-aggrandize and can feel a little bit haughty. So therefore, the day begins by performing something menial. Always remember, the gateway to moral integrity is humility. And the way that you build humility is by performing tasks, no matter how base or menial they are. Don't ever say to yourself, this is something which is beneath my dignity. A, because by performing those tasks, you will maintain your moral fitness and your moral integrity and your humility. And sometimes these are very, very, very unattractive. Whether it's one day changing diapers, I'm the garbage man in my house. I basically am the only one that more or less takes out the garbage. And I'm the dishwasher in my house. And you can say, yeah, it's really, I've done all the dishes mostly throughout our marriage. Because that's what makes me maintain my humility. Not because I parade around in yeshiva and give a shiur or put on a mask where people call me Rabbi this or Rabbi that, because that's my real me. And that protects me against self-inflation, protects me against egotism. And that's why having a healthy marital life where you don't bring your professional title and the way people think about you on the outside will into your marriage. Your wife shouldn't care about how accomplished you are in the real world. Your wife should care, how are you at home? Are you a husband? Are you a father? Are you a kind person? Are you a loving person? Are you a good person? Not about your public accomplishments. And your home is what protects your moral humility and your moral fitness, because you're not aggrandizing. You're not on stage. You're not presenting your title at home. You're presenting your real self, right? Everyone knows. You know your parents better than anyone in the public sphere knows them. Because you see through your parents. You see who they are. You live with them. You see their real them, their real personalities coming through. And the home is where you have to earn your value and earn your respect, not because it's handed to you based on title and public accomplishments. So the crime begins every day by taking out the garbage. So the next time there's a tish, or the next time there's a cleanup, or the next time in camp something happens, or the next time there's a task that doesn't really seem so elegant and so, run towards it. It will help you maintain your humanity and your humility rather than trying to avoid it. Second reason the coin does is because when you talk about dignity, dignity should never be defined based on the context. Dignity should always be within. There's a story that I can prove to you, so it may not have happened. But either way, someone once told me the story, and it's a great story. So even if it didn't happen, it's a great story. Gerald Ford. Anyone know who Gerald Ford was? Okay, good. Gerald Ford. A couple people in the room. Gerald Ford was the vice president to Richard Nixon. And when Nixon was not impeached, he wasn't impeached, he resigned before he could be impeached. So Gerald Ford took over for him, and then actually won an election, and then was defeated by Carter in 1976, right? No, he didn't win an election. He took over for Nixon, and he lost to Carter in 76, Jimmy Carter. So Gerald Ford was a clumsy, babbling, he would always fall off down the stairs, a little bit like people trying to track Biden. Biden's a little bit older. Ford was a little bit younger, and all the comedy shows would make fun of him. He'd walk down the stairs of the airplane, and he'd fall over the stairs, and he'd walk down the stairs of the White House, and he'd stumble, and he was bald, and You don't look at him like you looked at John Kennedy, this sparkling, attractive, young, charismatic. He was an older, and he was very underrated because he had a lot of wisdom, but just the packaging wasn't that elegant and people weren't able to fully appreciate him. But if you look back at the megalomaniacs we now have as presidents, I have a lot of nostalgia for Gerald Ford. I wish we had someone like Gerald Ford, for that matter, even Jimmy Carter. Because all the egotists that we have today and this parade of lunatics that are trying to vie for the highest office is just embarrassing to our culture and to our society. So Gerald Ford once was supposed to speak in front of 20,000 people in a sports arena. Could you imagine you're walking into a room, 20,000 people are looking at you and listening to you. You want to be at your best. You want to be rested. You want your hair to be proper. He didn't have much hair. You want your suit to be. Anyway, on the way to the arena, he got caught in this monsoon. And the rain came pelting down on him. I guess no one had an umbrella. And his otherwise, you know, clumsily fitting suit was even more raggy tag because it was all wet. And whatever hair he had got all disheveled. And now he gets up to speak in front of 20,000 people. And evidently, as this fake story goes, he says, "My father always told me that dignity is not of the wallet, nor is it of the clothing, but is of the spirit." I never forgot that phrase. If you want to hold yourself with dignity, dignity doesn't mean arrogance, dignity doesn't mean condescension, dignity doesn't mean superiority complex, it means you realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you in his image, and he gave every human being Tzelem Elokim, and you want to wear that image well, and especially, you don't just have Tzelem Elokim, but you're Banim Atem L'Hashem Elokechem, you're Hashem's child, and in humility and in privacy, without trying to brandish it, without trying to present it, you're going to conduct yourself as a creature of Hashem, as a child of Hashem. And your behavior and your deportment will reflect that. And I hope you know what I'm talking about. I always like to give you mental experiments so that you can connect and correlate my messages to real life. Who is, think to yourself for a moment, the most dignified person you ever met that you would like to model after? Not arrogant, not cocky, not, they can be very private, very meek, very humble, but just the way they conduct their talk, their behavior, their walk, their interaction with people, they, to you, reflect dignity. And you can't find that trait in the Mesillas Yesharim. Not every trait of being an Oved Hashem can be found in every single Mesillas Sefer. But just to feel that you are a dignified child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and reflect that. But sometimes when you feel that you're dignified, you feel, well, I can't do this because it's beneath my dignity. Can't do that because it's beneath my dignity. Can't do that because it's beneath my dignity. Take that phrase out of your lexicon. Take it out of your vocabulary. Nothing is beneath your dignity. Because if you have internal dignity, you bring it to whatever task you're performing. And I've seen a lot of people that are very wealthy. They don't know the first thing about dignity. I've seen a lot of people very poor. They're very dignified. I've seen people dressed in very expensive clothing. Don't know the first thing about dignity. I've seen people who don't have nice and attractive, necessarily fancy clothing. But they're very dignified. It's not of the clothing. It's not of the wallet. It's not of the task. It's of the spirit. And if you're a dignified person, you bring that dignity to the task. So try to take that phraseology out of your vocabulary. It's beneath my dignity. Nothing should be beneath your dignity. Your dignity is internal. It shouldn't be a product of your context. It shouldn't be a product of your financial station, a product of your dress, of your car, of your home, of where you are in society. It's just something internal. It's how you carry yourself, how you respect other people. Generally, if you're probably looking for the one key to unlock dignity, it's probably if you show respect to people. I don't know how to explain it to you, but if you show respect to people, people pick up that you value them, and you value them not just as objects or as tools to get to something. It's not just instrumental and acquisitional, and I'm seeing you as some stepping stone to get to something I need, but I value you. That's generally the working definition of how to work on dignity. If you show respect to people, real respect to people, then it seems to me that's the route towards dignity. So the first reason that every day the Kohen lifted the ashes and periodically had to take out the ashes beyond the logistical need was for humility. The second reason was because it shows that the dignity of the Kohen Gadol can survive taking out the garbage. Because dignity is not something that has to be imposed based on the context. Dignity is something inside. The third trait I want you to learn from Truma Sadeshin is probably the most subtle trait. It's not humility. It's not dignity. It's mental discipline and toughness. What I mean is as follows. There's a lot of excitement as the day starts in the Beis HaMikdash. the korbanos were beginning. Could you imagine opening the doors of the Beis HaMikdash and seeing throngs of people walk in with their animals and throngs of people walk in? Hey, how are you? It's a small country, everyone knows each other. See a lot of people you haven't seen in a while. They were bringing, just take yourself back to the Beis HaMikdash. Take yourself back to that excitement. The Beis HaMikdash is closed at night. Right? There's no real avodas at night. It opens in the morning. People have been waiting outside probably for an hour or two because they want to be first in the Beis HaMikdash. They got up much earlier, so now it's 6 o'clock in the morning. The doors of the Beis HaMikdash swing open, and everyone's filing into the Azara with their korbanos, with their money, with their requests. It's a mob scene. There's a lot of excitement. You want to get to work already. Let's roll up our sleeves and start the korbanos. Let's start the exciting part. Let's get into the juicy part. Let's get into the stuff that really is adventurous and I've been waiting for. And sometimes in life, it takes mental discipline to perform preparatory tasks and to be solid and grounded and thorough that will then help you succeed in the more exciting and spectacular. And a lot of people don't have that mental discipline. They'll run right to the main course. They'll run right to dessert. They'll run right to the part that gets them excited. And then everything is topsy-turvy. Let me give you an example from your life, okay? You know the best way to learn a sugya? The best way to learn a sugya is to learn the Gemara 6 times before you open up a Rishon. Because you need to create sectoring and coordinates and structure and flow. And boys who are in my shiur, sometimes I did this. When I teach shiur dalas, sometimes I'll give them a shiur 2 hours just to instruct. So just get the Gemara segmented depending on how complex the Gemara is. But you want to see the Rashba. You want to see Tosos. You want to see Rashi. You want to get to Reb Chaim. You want to get to a Chakira. And you need the mental discipline to slow it down, to say, let's be ordered. First things first. First, let me structure the foundation. First, let me dig the pit. First, let me get the coals really hot at the barbecue before I put the fire on, right? Think about all the areas in your life where you have a tendency to skip steps because the first preliminary stages, they're not exciting. They're not enticing. They're not, as people say, sexy. They're not something that really is intriguing and enchanting. And you want to get right to the barbecue. You want to put the meat. But then you know what happens. The meat gets burnt. You're eating raw hamburgers. And it takes sometimes mental discipline in life not to run too quickly to the secondary stages that are exciting, but to create. Sometimes I'll walk into my room, okay, and I'm really excited at home to learn or to write, whatever I want to do, and I'll look around me and my work area is not clean. In a literal Trumas HaDeshen way. You will not be successful in life thinking and growing if your work area, now some people need a really clean work area, but if you have a disheveled world around you, your mind will be distracted and your level of focus won't be strong. People ask me all the time, should I listen to music when I'm learning or working or something? And I can answer that question, but the baseline of the conversation has to be, there is no way you could focus as intensely upon what you're thinking about if you're also listening to music. I don't care. It's medically, biologically proven because your mind is processing two things. Now, you could say, I need to relax, and I'm more relaxed when I'm learning because I have a lot of anxiety. Okay, that means you're willing to give up some of your focus to be in a more relaxed stage. Maybe you have to pick up the paper. Everything has to be clean. You could say, I'm more relaxed. Sometimes I'll listen to music when I want to be more poetic, when I want my mind to think in imagery and emotions, not necessarily linearly in concrete ideas. So music helps me think a different process. But if you're just looking in pure focus, there's no way you can focus when you're doing two things. So if your work area is disheveled, and there's a lot of junk lying around, and there's a lot of things on the table, there's no way you can focus because at some point your mind will catch on to something, and then some of your mental capacity will be diverted to that. I remember I was very, very inspired by a professor that I had in university. This is 1986. 1986, no one had PCs, no one had tablets, no one had phones. But he was just starting to understand computers, and he taught me a lot about computers, and I majored in computers. And I would walk into his room, and we'd sit together in his office, and his desk was absolutely spanking clean. There was nothing on the desk. Everything was in his computer. Again, in those days, you can't imagine what it meant of everything. This was a mainframe. It wasn't a PC. It was a terminal that was attached to a mainframe. I still remember working for IBM in 1986, and there were computers on the wall. I still remember computers on the wall. Reels and reels of tape. So it wasn't as simple as just getting an Android phone and putting your files into the cloud. And it taught me about having clarity and having organization and clean and not being distracted. So those are the three traits to think about that are symbolized by Trumas HaDeshen. One is humility. The more menial the task, the more lowly the task, Some of the great musarniks would actually put themselves into very, very debasing situations in order to work on their humility. They would dress up as simple commoners, and they would go on ships. And they would, you know what happens on ships, people would relieve themselves and put some of the human waste into certain areas of the ship. All sorts of stories where some of these musarniks would want to come and intentionally be humiliated by having human waste placed on them or placed in their way. And this was something that teach them humility. So in our world, we don't look for situations to debase ourselves. We don't seek out debasing and what's that I'm looking for? Dismissive, but what's that I'm looking for? Give me a good word. Not debasing, degrading moments. We don't seek them out. We have enough of a struggle for our own self-esteem, so we don't want to intentionally degrade ourselves. But if there are jobs and tasks that don't seem to be so exciting, that don't seem... Try to take the tasks that no one else wants. Because if no one else wants, then it's probably because they're not attractive. I learned this lesson really well. For the baseball fans here, any baseball fans here? Anyone? Okay. I'll take some pride, okay? I was a superb third baseman. I was really good at third base. Third base is called the hot corner, and I played it really well. How did I get to be a third baseman? Because you know what happens the first time everyone takes their positions when you're 8 years old. Everyone wants to be the pitcher. Everyone wants to be the first baseman. Everyone wants to be the center fielder. Those are the jobs that everyone wants. Who wants to play third base when you're 8 years old and your arm can hardly throw it across the diamond? No one wants third base. Center, I'll take it. And I became a good third baseman because no one really wanted to play third base because they couldn't make the throw. I took it. I was happy to take it. And I really worked hard at being a good third baseman. So sometimes it's a task, not just in sports, that no one wants because they're just so, so unattractive and so, so common. Sometimes if you take those, it helps you maintain your humility. It helps you. Number two is don't ever feel that you're going to compromise your dignity by who you talk with or how you interact. One of the things I like, okay, I'm going next week for 2 days. It's not a really big trip. But when I travel, and I hate travel, it's like the worst part of my life for a million reasons under the sun. But one of the things that I love about travel is I just get to talk to types of people that in my normal routine I would never get a chance to talk with. Stewardesses, people in airport, the candy shops, I don't know, people in restaurants, whatever. Simple people, good people. What do you mean? My name is Rabbi this, Rabbi that. No, when I travel, I'm just a regular person. And if I can make a conversation with a stewardess on her way home to her family in Pittsburgh, what do you tell me about your life or something? Not that I spent my whole time chatting. I spent my whole time sleeping and writing shiurim. But whenever I get a chance, I'm happy to talk to people. I'm happy to talk to real people. I was someone asked me at one of these panels, how did I become a mechanic? Like, what made me become a mechanic? So I joked with them, you know what? It was a total accident. On career night at Yeshiva University, my dream was always to pump gas. Because if you pump gas at a gas station, you meet real people, you talk to people, they'll talk to you. That's what I wanted. So I looked for the sign that said mechanic. And I went into the wrong room and I entered the room with mechanics. I really wanted to be a car mechanic. And I went to the wrong room and all of a sudden I got stuck being a mechanic. But I really want to be a car mechanic and just fix people's cars and talk to them and pump their gas and get to know people. Anyway, I ended up being a rabbi. What can I do? But real people. Nothing beneath your dignity. You can talk to people at their level and show them respect. And the third lesson of Trumas Hadeshen is try not to skip steps. Try to think in your life where you want to go to the next step quicker and sooner. And it's very important to have mental discipline in life, in intellectual activity, in personal activity, and not skip steps. And not be afraid to take tedious and hard work that's necessary to get you to the next level. It's true in intellectual analysis. It's true in life. It's true in relationships. It's true. We always want to skip over the hard stuff and get to the juicy stuff. And the juicy stuff won't always be as savory and as meaningful if you don't go through the hard stuff first. Okay. So that's in terms of why every morning. Okay, we're getting to the end of the shiur. So we don't have a hope of getting to Minchas Chavitim. But let's at least talk about the next pasuk. Pasuk Gimel. V'lavash ha-kohen nidovad. Yilbash al Basara. The Kohen takes his big day kahuna, he lifts the deshen, ufashad es bigadav, vilavash bigadim acherim, vihotzias adeshen al michutz lamachne. Rashi says, I'm not going to read the Rashi because I don't have enough time to read the Rashi, that when he switches clothing between the Trumas Hadeshen And the Hotzas HaDeshet, Rashi here quotes only one part of a Gemara in Shabbos. I'll quote the two parts of the Gemara in Shabbos. Rashi in the Chumash quotes the Gemara that says that it's only Derech Eretz, that the clothing that you cook food with for your master, you should not serve your master with. So by taking out the ashes, the second part of this process, his clothing can become very dirty. Lifting the ashes is not so bad because it's in a contained area. You can lift some ashes. Once you're carrying it outside of the Beis HaMikdash, there's going to be wind. There's going to be it's going to be blowing on you. You're going to be moving it. Right? If I just take a little bit of ashes, I can take my nice clothing. I don't need an apron. But if I'm going to take the ashes far away from the Beis HaMikdash, at some point it's going to blow on me. My clothes are going to be dirty. So in order to prevent my big day kahuna that I will then return to when I get back from the ashes delivery. So when I deliver the ashes to the sanitation area, then I'm going to put on some dirty clothing. It's actually a machlokas whether those dirty clothing were substandard big day kahuna or those dirty clothing were not even big day kahuna. But it's certainly not the prime big day kahuna. It's not the best big day kahuna. And Rashi says it's derech eretz. Isn't that interesting? That according to Rashi, this is just one version of the Gemara in Shabbos, we learn protocol in the Beis HaMikdash from Derech Eretz. You would think this is the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is holy. It's sacred. It's beyond. And yet, protocol and organization in the Beis HaMikdash is mirrored based on Derech Eretz, the way that people behave. Many people mistake the following Mishnah. Let me take a few steps back. When Chazal say Derech Eretz Kadma L'Torah, they don't mean Midos. They don't mean Parnasa, even though it's been turned into those phrases. We first thought that Derech Eretz was Parnasa, Torah and Derech Eretz. Many people have used it for Midos, Derech Eretz, good Midos. The literal translation of Derech Eretz means what? Customs of human beings. When human beings live with one another, they develop what's called decorum, politeness, customs, rules of interaction, the way we just behave with other people. If you were the only person to inhabit this earth, there'd be no Derech Eretz. There'd still be Midos. You still want to think about morality and compassion, whatever Midos are, modesty, humility. But there wouldn't be Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz means that we live together, and when we live together, we create customs and habits of politeness in order that society should properly function. Not just law. Law protects against crimes and injustices. But let's say we all keep the law. We just want to be kind and polite and open the door for people and not speed ahead of people and not cross into other people's lanes and not be rude to people and not eat your food on people. It's not a crime, but it's just creating a more comfortable habitat that we can share space together and share interactions together. That's what Derech Eretz means. And you would think, that's why the Mishnah in Avos is coming to debunk this, Derech Eretz, this is human convention. It can't possibly be important in the religious scheme. Religion, Avodas Hashem, marches to its own tune. There are values, there are mitzvos. Why should Derech Eretz at any point influence? And that's what Chazal are telling us. That Hashem wants us to take our Avodas Hashem and frame it within human interaction. And if we're not able to frame within human interaction, that it won't be as authentic, it won't be as ingrained, because we happen to live with human beings. So Hashem says, while you're becoming an Oved Hashem, take into account Derech Eretz. I remember I told you this a long time ago in Parsha Shemos. Moshe is at the snap. Hashem tells Moshe, go back to Mitzrayim, release the Jewish people. Shalach Hashem Evi Avdeini. Every minute there's another Jew being thrown into the Nile. Every minute there's another baby being put into a brick wall. And what does Moshe do? He goes back to Yisro to ask his permission. I go back to Yisro. The 2-3 days it takes you to go back to Yisro, you could have saved hundreds of lives. You could have accelerated the Gula. The answer is all these great and high-minded values can't begin until you demonstrate Derech Eretz, until you act within more or less the expected way that people behave. And every day in the Beis HaMikdash, the source, this is only one day in Shabbos, one day in Shabbos says, it's Allah the Beis HaMikdash. Just quote the Gemara views in Shabbos, Kuf Yud Gimel, Kuf Yud Aleph and Aleph, Minayin Lashinu Begadim Beis HaMikdash Menatar, Shinemar V'Lovish HaKlein. It's Allah Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash, we require Shinu Begadim, we change clothing in Yom Kippur, we change clothing every day. It's part of the Beis HaMikdash protocol. But the second day, I think it's a B'Yochan that says, if Yonas and I forget who, the Gemara says, no, it's a Mashal, the clothing you cook with shouldn't be the clothing you serve your master with. Namely, we shape based on Mikdash routine, based on the way people normally behave with one another out of respect. And the message of changing clothing is that even in the Beis HaMikdash, Derech Eretz counts. So now is another good mental experiment. who's the person? Again, I don't want it to become in any way derogatory and disrespectful to people. But when did you ever find yourself in a situation or with a certain person that they were very from and very, very dedicated to religion and very dedicated to, but somehow the Derech Eretz was lacking? I don't mean bad midos. The midos were fine. But just the way they treated people. They weren't over any bad midos. They weren't cocky. They weren't arrogant. They weren't selfish. They weren't rude. They were not able to place themselves into the normal patterns of human decorum. And it's a very tricky challenge because you don't want to be vulnerable and you don't want to be submissive or subjective to popular trends because popular cultural values are not necessarily consonant with Jewish values. And part of being an Oved Hashem is rebelling against values that you feel. And sometimes these values are artificial and they're vain and they're empty and you don't want to succumb to vain and empty values. But when it's a question of being polite, or ask yourself maybe in a more positive way, Who is the most polite person you've met in your life? Doesn't have to be a Rebbe. Who just is polite and sensitive to others around them and shows respect to people around them and takes other people around them into account and acts in concert with the fact that you're in a world with other people? Truma Sedeshen, changing clothing, according to one day in the Gemara and Shabbos, reminds us that Derech Eretz Kadmah LaTorah and Derech Eretz Kadmah LaKorbanos. And when the Beis HaMikdash starts every day, the Kohen changes clothing as a sign of Derech Eretz. I mean, after all, maybe you could have had two Kohanim do Trumas HaDeshen, and one Kohen take out the Deshen, and the Kohen takes out the Deshen, shouldn't do any other Avodah. But the Torah says, no, I want you to do that Avodah, but I want you to change your clothing from the dirty clothing into the clean clothing, because I want you to demonstrate the value of Derech Eretz. We don't have that much time, so we'll stop there. I want to talk about clothing in general, so I'll just mention the two areas that you have to think about as you continue to grow your religious identity. In our world, we don't take clothing as formally as in some other sectors of the Torah world. There isn't a formula and a uniform, but it doesn't mean that clothing don't matter for tefillah, and it also doesn't mean in particular that clothing doesn't matter for Shabbos. Okay, tefillah, we'll talk about some other point, but I can just talk about Shabbos very quickly. There's a mitzvah to dress for Shabbos. And dress for Shabbos has to be different and superior by at least one degree than your non-Shabbos clothing. And unfortunately, because in our culture we don't take clothing that seriously, and because Corona, a lot of people didn't leave their houses for Shabbos, that is something that we in our community have to work hard on. So whatever you're wearing today, that can't be what you're wearing for Shabbos. Now for some people, they'll upgrade to two or three levels. It's all very, very relative. Al-Pi Kabbalah, people are makbid to wear white. So if you want to really be makbid, mahajim min mahajim, you wear a white shirt on Shabbos. Okay, but I understand that people, but to just show up, and I don't care where you are, it could be camp, it could be your house, it could be your sick. The mitzvah of dressing for Shabbos is a lach of kvod Shabbos, which is part of the mitzvah of Shabbos. And kvod Shabbos means it has to be a little bit more elegant than your weekday clothing. Everyone has to take that in their way, but I see that there's a lot of neglect when it comes to the mitzvah of kvod Shabbos as it expresses the clothing. Okay, we'll stop here.